What's up, everyone? Happy Time Zone. Welcome back, or welcome. My name is Christos Matskas, and I'm really excited to be here. I work as a senior program manager for Microsoft Identity, and together there with me today, I have JP. JP? That was your cue, man.
I know, it was awful. Hey, everybody, I'm John, or JP, or John Patrick, or whatever sort of insults you want to hurl my way. I am also a program manager in developer advocacy for identity. So Christos and I, we get to go hang out with developers and help them learn and love our identity platform. Identity is one of those things that everybody needs in their apps. And there aren't that many apps that don't need to know who you are. They don't, you know, if I don't know who you are, then I can't show you your data. And with the exception of, you know, general purpose marketing sites, I can't think of many apps or services that don't need to know who you are in order to function. So thanks for joining us. This is episode one of a 5-part series. We're going to be going through the Implement Microsoft Identity Learn Path, which is a Microsoft Learn learning path, where we're going to go through these 5 different episodes. And today, getting into the ground floor with getting started with Microsoft Identity. If you're not familiar with Learn, Microsoft Learn is a whole platform full of modules and different learning paths that are made up of those modules where you can go and get hands-on experience learning about these different Microsoft technologies, everything from Azure to Office to Identity, everything that we have. There are learn paths and learn modules as a part of it that gets you experience and gets you handling and using all of our latest tech and all self-service. So you can go out there and do exactly what you need to do when you need to do it. So what are we going to be doing today, Christos?
Well, today our learning objective is to introduce identity and that jumped a bit. Explain the different types of tokens used in Microsoft Identity. Nestor, hi! If you're on YouTube, wherever you join us from, thank you. I'm in Seattle, so the weather has been pretty crazy today. How's the weather down in your side of Carolina, JP?
Yeah, so I'm right at North and South Carolina's border, so I get to choose which one I want to tell people I'm in right now. But today it is hot; it's like 900 degrees. It's humid, and now it's raining. So
no barbecue.
It's a little damp today. Yeah, no barbecue today. Maybe tomorrow.
We had torrential rain this morning, and now it's nice and sunny. So we're excited to be here because, despite of the weather, we had some really cool stuff to talk about. And thank you for joining us wherever you are. Twitch, YouTube, Learn TV. We're here to educate you and teach you some interesting stuff. So today we're going to be covering a very brief introduction into Microsoft Identity, and then we'll look into tokens, and then we'll look at the different account types, like what kind of accounts can you sign in on Microsoft Identity. And hopefully walking out of this course, you'll be able to make an educated decision on how to build your applications on the Microsoft Identity using the right topology. Now, remember, this is a live and interactive session, so please say hi, drop us your messages on the channel that you're using, whichever channel you're using. We have people moderating the chat as well, so if you have any questions about the things that we cover throughout the course, we'll try to answer them, some of them live, some of them offline. So we really look forward to hear from you. There will be some knowledge checks later on, so make sure to pay attention as we cover certain stuff. And let's kick it off with introduction to the Microsoft Identity platform. So if you haven't used Identity before, JP said it well, there's no system that you interact today that doesn't require to know who you are. So unless it's a marketing site that just presents you with some information, everything else you interact needs to have a profile, whether you're buying stuff from Walmart or whether you're interacting with some line of business application. So the Microsoft Identity platform through Azure Active Directory allows developers to build applications that can sign in users, can authorize these users, and then also acquire access to call other resources like Microsoft Office 365 or the Azure portal and Azure resources or thousands of other SaaS applications and internal apps. So your web app can call an API or something else, and you can secure them all like that. So what is modern identity, JP?
So that's one of the big questions we always get, right? Which is, yes. Especially if you're a .NET developer, and if you've been working in, say, Windows Active Directory type environments or on-prem, that sort of thing, we've kind of been spoiled, right? I've done .NET for a long time. I know you have too. And for a long time, we just typed in, you know, user.identity.name, and we knew who the person was, right? And a lot of that wasn't really code that was in our app. It was all stuff that was built inside of the infrastructure that we lived in. It was because our ops teams had deployed, you know, Windows Active Directory, and there were domain controllers and Windows servers, and they were all configured in certain ways. And for a long time, we had that. We didn't really have to worry so much about identity. But as we've moved on and gotten closer, there are a lot of changes that go into, like, moving to cloud, for example, and being more elastic and being more dynamic in how we're building code and writing apps and deploying them. And so we kind of need a more modern identity system, right? So if we look at kind of where folks are and what they need. You know, developers need to know who the people using their apps are. That's probably one of the biggest ones is there just aren't that many apps that don't need to know who we are. Even marketing sites want to know who we are, even if we don't necessarily want them to know who we are. But if you're building an app today, a mobile app, a web app, a desktop app, anything like that, you're going to most likely need to know who the person is who's using it so they can see their data, because their data is what makes your app valuable, right? The problem is we don't want to ask people to create new usernames and passwords. I don't know about you, but like how many passwords are in your like password manager, Christos?
Right now I'm at 450 passwords clocking
in. Yeah, 450.
Really half a thousand passwords.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So we don't want to ask people to create
new. And you have to remember them. I mean, I don't remember them.
Right. What you are your own password manager, right? So we don't necessarily want to have to ask people to create new ones either. We want them to use one they've already got, a Facebook, a Google, a Microsoft account, a whatever. So we don't want to be in a position where we're asking people to create new stuff. And especially when people are at work, like if you've already got work credentials and you're already signing into stuff at work, we don't necessarily want to have, you know, we don't want people to have to create new identities when they're at work to sign into your apps and your stuff. And the extension of that, and part of the reason why, is because people have data all over the place. SaaS, like software as a service, has taken over the world. The software you're building at your business should really be focused on what makes your business make money, and not necessarily, commodity type stuff. Like, are you going to build your own expenses app, or are you going to go buy one off the shelf? Right? Which one of those is the better use of engineering time? Because of that, people have lots of data, sort of all over the place. A little bit of data here, a little bit of data there. And as an extension, they want to be able to share that. But sharing it is when things get a little, that's when things get a little squirrely and get a little bit dangerous. Specifically because for so long, people had username and password databases. If we went out to the internet and we searched, and still do, we went out to the internet and searched and said, you know, Node tutorial or getting started with .NET tutorial. Half of these things on the internet have, oh, just use a database and store your usernames and passwords in there, right? And from a purely like a security kind of a focus, now you have a bunch of credentials in a database, which makes you a bigger target. And if somebody gets that database, it's got usernames and passwords in it, and ends up on Troy Hunt's website and a bunch of other places where people are sharing and buying it. And of course, your users will end up reusing passwords from somewhere else or whatever the case might be. And before too long, now, you know, your app is in the news for the wrong reasons, because you had a breach and somebody stole your database. And next thing you know, every tech site and every tech personality on Twitter is talking about you, and not because your app is so cool, but because your app accidentally released 10,000 usernames and passwords out on the internet. But beyond that, you generate a lot of data in that app. So if it's an expenses app, or if it's your file storage app or whatever, you got a bunch of data in that app. And you may want to let other things have access to that data, but your password is pretty sensitive. And your credentials. And so that's when we look into newer things, newer technologies like OAuth and OAuth 2. So the original problem that OAuth and OAuth 2 set out to solve was, how do I let other services access my data, but without giving that other service my username and password? Because giving some other service username and password is typically a bad idea, because now that app can do everything literally as you, which we're going to talk about here in just a minute. But OAuth and OAuth 2, they introduced these three primary concepts, which we're going to talk about a little bit today. So we have a resource, and we use resource a lot, and we're going to use it throughout this deck specifically because we are defining it here. So the resource, you can just think of that as an API or a service that you need to access. So this is You want to access a user's calendar? Well, Outlook or calendar is the resource, right? That's the thing you're trying to read. The scope is the piece of data within that resource. So in the case of the calendar itself is the scope, and the operation you can do, like read the calendar, that's considered a scope with a broader resource of Outlook or Exchange or your Gmail mailbox or whatever. And the access token is what you use to do that. So the access token is the thing that is granted to you as the developer, and yet that access token is what you present to an API to say, hey, this user said I could read their calendar, so here's a piece of verifiable data that you can use, service, to make sure that that's cool, right? So why don't we want to share our passwords? Bad people do bad things, which we know that, right? That already happens. But good people do bad things too. They reuse passwords across services. And the biggest problem with this is, let's say that I wanted to give you access to read my calendar, right? So Christos is going to build an app, and it's going to schedule my calendar to, you know, put in some focus time or something, or build me in some time to do things like, you know, clean up my basement or something, whatever. If I give his app my username and password, his app can access my Outlook, it can access my Xbox account, my Azure accounts, my OneDrive, and all the files and pictures and music and all that sort of stuff that's in there, right? He can act exactly as me from his application.
Yeah.
And I think we're all guilty of downloading, you know, a sketchy looking app from an app store or whatever on our phone. And, you know, would you really want to give that app your username and password? Probably not. And so the second half to that is what we mentioned earlier about, you know, username and password databases getting stolen. People reuse passwords all the time. For better or for worse, they do. We tell them not to, but they do anyway. And because Christos has 456 passwords, he can't remember all those, so he uses a password manager to do it. But if you've got 450 passwords or even 100 passwords or 100 sites you need to remember, it's going to be way easier for you to just use the same one in lots of different places. And that's sort of an extension of this problem here is, well, now I've got your password because you used it at another site that had really poor security. Well, now I've got your password, so now I can get into your app, or I can get into your Microsoft account or your Google account or whatever, because you reused that password. You reused that password at my service. And so, you know, owning a password database is just never a thing that we want to encourage anybody to do. We always want you to use some kind of an external service, and that's what we're here to talk about. So we got OAuth 2, but OAuth 2 created a brand new problem, right? And what would you got any idea what that problem might be, Christos?
Well, yeah, as you said before, OAuth 2 was to provide access to resources. So one app could access another resource. So let's say if I sign into your app and you need to access my Facebook details or my Google Drive, then you could do that through OAuth 2. But what happened is people started abusing OAuth 2 to also do sign-ins, right? So not only did they request access to resources, but they also used it as a sign-in process, which is not designed for. It's not secure. It's broken. So back to you.
So yeah, exactly. Like it happened all the time is, oh, well, I'm going to access this user's Gmail and, you know, read their calendar. And, oh, I've got this access token. I'll take a look at that and see what their username is. So I can say, hey, Christos, instead of saying, hey, you know, whatever, you know, unique user ID you've got. And so that created this new problem where we had a bunch of apps that were abusing access tokens to try to figure out who the users are. And in a lot of cases, access tokens are opaque and you can't see them as a developer. But the key to the access token is the contract is not with you as the application. The contract is between the service or the resource you're trying to call and the authentication system. So the Microsoft token service, which is Azure AD, or the Google token service, the Google identity service, the contract for access tokens is between that service and the resource you are accessing. And you as the intermediary, you as the developer who's trying to access that resource as the user, you are not privy to that contract. So today you might be able to read the token, and then tomorrow the access token contract changes and suddenly you can't read it anymore. And of course, there have been plenty of apps, especially older ones that maybe weren't maintained very long. A lot of apps suffer from, oh, token format changed and it wasn't a token I was supposed to be looking at. So, and nobody's around to maintain it. And so that's how we ended up with OpenID Connect. And OpenID Connect is sort of like a bolt-on or piggyback to OAuth 2. A lot of the same flows and a lot of the same grants, They're called flows in OpenID, and they're called grants in OAuth 2. A lot of those, we sort of bolted on this thing called an ID token. And the ID token is just that. It's an identity token. It's just a list of claims about you, a list of key value pairs of data about the user. And it's intended for your app to use that ID token. So the app itself gets the ID token, and you'll still get an access token to go call the Google Calendar API or the Graph API, the Microsoft Graph API. But the ID token is not for the downstream resource. The ID token is for you and your app. So you can show the user their name, or you can look at their roles and see what they're allowed to do inside of your app. That is the function of the ID token. And that way you don't have to peek into that access token to try to steal extra information. You get it in a much more reliable fashion. So Christos is going to show us some of these tokens.
We have a couple of questions. So the first one is probably for you. What is the relation between Microsoft Identity and OpenID and OAuth 2?
So Microsoft Identity is, you may have also heard it called Azure AD. They're essentially one and the same. Azure AD and Microsoft Identity implement the OpenID Connect and OAuth 2 standards. So any code library, any service that's expecting OpenID Connect or OAuth 2 style tokens are used or can be used by or with Azure AD or with Microsoft Identity. Mm-hmm. So the standards of OAuth 2 and OpenID Connect are implemented by lots and lots and lots of different folks. We implement the spec in our directory service. And we have a bunch of extra stuff that goes on top of that, but we implement the spec. So your application doesn't have to use custom libraries or custom code to interact with our identity service.
Exactly. There's nothing proprietary or Microsoft Identity other than, like, especially when it comes to signing in and acquire tokens, then this is standard, right? So if you move from one identity provider to another, your library should work by changing endpoints. That's the whole point there. And we are working with a wider community rather than trying to make something like Microsoft only, right? So that's the answer. We are built on top of these standards. The second question is somewhat related or unrelated. Can we use Azure Key Vault for securing stuff, which is a valid question. But I think to access Key Vault, somehow you need to authenticate, correct?
Yeah, I mean, we can't get to Key Vault unless we know who you are.
Yep.
So, and Key Vault has policies for storing secrets. And unless we can unequivocally know who you are, we can't say that you can or can't see a secret. So Azure AD is what we use for literally all of our services. So if you've signed into the Azure portal, if you've signed into Office, if you've signed into Xbox, if you've signed into like Consumer Outlook, that has used one of the Microsoft Identity systems. Key Vault as an Azure resource is a great place to store secrets. So you can store stuff in it, but in order to get those secrets back out, we have to know who you or the application you're using is, and you have to have permission in order to do that. So we have to assign permission to those users and then authenticate the user in order to know who they are. And that's the point of what the ID and access tokens are, is to authenticate the user and to grant other applications access to their data.
Sweet. So hopefully we answer these questions. If you have any more as we go through, throw them at us and we'll try to answer them as best as we can. Right. So now we're going to be talking about different types of tokens used in Microsoft Identity. We talked about standards like OpenID Connect and OAuth 2. So let's see how these work. So on the Microsoft Identity platform, there are three types of tokens. The ID token is about who the user is, and it is used by your application. So developers building apps should be interacting with the ID token. They can crack it open, they can look at the claims, grab the information they need, and then move on. With regards to the second is the access token, right? So the access token is a short-lived token that gets acquired by the application for accessing user data in other resources. A very good example, just to tie it back into Key Vault, if we have an application that needs to sign in users and then go and get some secrets or go and get some user information that is, you know, stored in Key Vault or somewhere else, then you can acquire an access token to do that. Or you can acquire an access token to call your API, or you can get an access token to call one of the other APIs via Microsoft Graph, like SharePoint or OneDrive, and interact with all these things. But you need to somehow authenticate. And if you're building APIs, it's very important to not only secure the front end, but also secure the back end, because you don't want anyone to be calling your API if they discover that endpoint. And finally, we have a reference token, which is extremely useful because along with an access token, Azure AD also passes a long-lived token that is used for refreshing your access token behind the scenes without really asking the user, because imagine that would be an awful experience. JP, do you have an example of where a refresh token would make a lot of sense?
Some mobile apps. That's probably one of the biggest ones, although they're being used for lots of other things now. But mobile apps are one of the big ones, because you can imagine if you had to sign into your sign into like your email.
Yes.
On your, like, Outlook or Gmail or something on your phone. If you had to sign in once an hour, I don't know about you, but I would not use email on my phone anymore. I would just give up. Like, yeah. I can't do this. Because, you know, you get notifications and all that sort of stuff. Like, how awful would that be? You wake up in the morning, you look at your phone, it's like, oh, I didn't have any new emails. And then you type in your password and you get a deluge of 400 emails. It'd just be awful. So,
yeah,
so refresh tokens are great for that.
Awful user experience. So refresh tokens are built to make our interaction with identity systems secure and usable at the same time, because there's always a trade-off between security and usability, and we want to have the right balance there. So on this slide, we can see that we actually look at a typical ID token, because this is the one that contains some basic user information. It can be used for authorizing within the application. And there is a great question right now. Does the access token include my scope and role? So I will cover that on the next slide, because right now we're covering ID tokens. But the audience of the ID token is your application. That's the case. So as you can see here, we highlighted some fields like the name and the preferred username. These are the things that you tend to look at as a developer to present the user back with some kind of meaningful information. And then everything else in there is for your own benefit. And next is the access token, which is only intended for resources. Now, the question was, does the access token include scope and roles? It does, but it is your API's responsibility, or the resources, the downstream API or the downstream resource responsibility, to look into these scopes and roles and make the appropriate authorization decisions. So yes, but it should not be the front end that deals with those in an access token. It's the back end that deals with these. Hopefully that answers that. And again, it should only be passed down to the next resource. Don't touch it. Don't play with it. Don't take a dependency on that access token, because those tokens are opaque and could change at any time. So therefore, it could break your application if you take a dependency on those. And the audiences of the access token is the resource that it's intended to. So you get the access token, and on the audience here, it should match your API authorization or something else. There you go. And finally, refresh tokens. Yes. And finally, the refresh tokens are long-lived ones. There are some changes coming to the Microsoft Identity Platform with continuous access evaluation, but this is something to cover a lot later. Right now, all you care about is that refresh tokens should be treated as sensitive information, because they can be used to reacquire access tokens. They can be invalidated at any time. Therefore, you know, if I leave the company, somebody in the IT department will go and validate all my access to Outlook and what have you, because right now I have access for at least as long as my refresh token or access token is issued. So somebody can go and revoke them, and therefore I won't be able to access sensitive information. And finally, refresh tokens should only be sent to Azure AD. You can't send them to anywhere else. They're acquired by Azure AD. This should be sent to Azure AD.
They're kind of a refresh token is, you can almost think of it as being sort of like a credential, in that you don't send it to the resource like an access token. You send it back to Azure AD in order to get a net new resource, a net new access token that you can then send to the resource, because the access token is going to expire typically within about 60 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then one more thing, while you're getting your demo set up, the question earlier about access tokens with roles and scopes. Roles are available in ID tokens and in access tokens. There are some cases where your web app may be both the front end that you're signing into and the resource that you're trying to access. Access tokens are it gets a little weird in that kind of a scenario where you've got a web app, like a single web app that might be doing both things. Typically, what we see is the ID token is used by a web app, and that web app may call some other APIs. Now, if this is a browser app, for example, that's a little bit different because a browser app is going to be, JavaScript or Blazor or whatever, and it's still going to get an ID token. But in the case of a browser app, that browser app's running in the browser, and thus you can't trust anything that it's doing. So the access token that you get to call your backend API, your API is the last step. It is the last thing that can ensure that you are seeing the data you're supposed to be seeing, because if it's in the browser, I can do anything I want to it, right? Because it's running on my machine, on an untrusted machine. Yep. And so you really can't trust a client app that's running on somebody else's machine, including JavaScript apps in the browser. You can't trust that that's going to be correct. So yeah, just a note, an extra side note, commentary. So no, you're going to show us,
I'm going to show you tokens, right? And in this scenario, we're going to actually be building a web browser application built on top of Node and Express. It's going to use an Azure Active Directory app registration to do the authentication. And then finally, we're going to be adding a web page so we can actually show the Azure AD token details. This is only for demo. And if you're going through the Learn module yourselves, you'll be building exactly the same thing. So I have already pre-built that. You don't have to see me typing like a maniac while we're trying to get the demo up and running, but I'll walk you through it very, very quickly just to explain what happens here. So it's just a server, a Node server, doing nothing major other than serving a page on 3007. And then there's a static HTML file that contains both the UI and all the JavaScript to interact with Azure Active Directory, authenticate the users, and change the UI a little bit based on what's happening. So the main object here is always the MSAL object. And there's a config that goes with it. That config tells the app or the code where to go to authenticate, right? So it needs to know which Azure Active Directory to use and which app registration. And there are some settings there that I will show very, very briefly that need to match. So the redirect URI, for example, is where the Azure Active Directory will send back the tokens on line 31. And if that is not matching, then Azure Active Directory will say, well, I don't trust the, or I can't see where I need to return the token, therefore I'm not going to send it to you. So once you configure the settings up here, then we initiate an MSAL application, and there's a little bit of code here that goes and acquires tokens, so I'm going to skip through that for now, but the magic happens in line 127, where we do the sign-in, and there are different types, pop-up and redirect. It checks for both. The code could be a lot more concise if you were just doing one. And there's a sign out. So as you can see, with five lines of code and three lines of configuration, we can actually sign in users to our application. Now, acquiring tokens is a little bit more winded. So maybe, 15 lines of code to call an HTTP endpoint and get the token information. So let's run it. It's already running. So I'm going to come to our application 3007. I'm going to click sign in. Prompts me for a sign-in. I sign in with our current user. And because I've already consented, we'll cover consent on module 4. But for now, I've already consented this app. I said, yeah, go and look at my profile. And this returns back the token information. It looks very similar to what I was showing in the PowerPoint. And as you can see, it also called Graph, one of our APIs that manages the internal Microsoft data or the tenant data. And as you can see here, it pulls some additional information like my mobile phone, where I work, preferred location. No, I work from home. Surprise, surprise. And my display name, which is very useful. And there you have it. With this demo, very few lines of code. In fact, if we were to jump back into Azure Active Directory, just to show you a few things, I'll go into my app registrations, which I have already done for you to save you and spare you the time. I wish this could go away once and for all. And I'm going to say create it today. See, I even created a date. It's a fresh one, right out of the oven. So this application ID matches our app. This is our tenant that we're using. And in authentication, we say we're using a single page app that returns the tokens back to redirect URI localhost 3007. That's cool. It. Yeah.
Yeah, that's nice. So you didn't have to write any code. You didn't really have to understand anything about you don't have to understand really protocol level stuff, right? Like all that's handled by the library for you.
Yeah. Exactly. That's the beauty.
Which is good. Yes. Yeah, because we don't want you writing protocol code if you don't have to.
I wouldn't even be able to do it if I wanted to. So there are some really clever people. We have 1,500 engineers day in, day out. That's their job. That's the bread and butter, and we're here to consume it, which is beautiful. Right, back at you, my friends.
Cool. Well, I think we got our first knowledge check.
Yes.
Yeah, first one.
Now let's see if you've been paying attention. You can follow along. So let me just fire up the slides again. So if you go to https://ak.ms/learn-live-tv, you can follow along and test your knowledge. So the first question is, which of the following statements about ID tokens is correct? ID tokens contain basic identity information about current logged in user. ID tokens can be submitted in an authentication request to prove the identity of the user. And ID tokens include both identity information and the permissions a user has been granted to an application. Let's see who's been paying attention. What do you say, JP?
So ID tokens include identity info and the permissions a user has been granted. So I think we learned the access token is where the access token is where the permissions a user has. That's where they are. Yep. So it's not C, right?
Nope.
ID tokens can be submitted in an authentication request to prove the identity of the user. You know, it's funny. There is actually a flow where you do that, but we didn't talk about that flow, and it's a pretty specialized.
So
it's not B. So that means it must be A.
It must be A. It is A.
Yeah.
Right. And it is it. Well, I think we're getting paid for what we do. It's a good thing. We can keep our jobs. And which of the following statements about access tokens is incorrect? Incorrect, right? Pay attention to the wording here because
we'll
catch you. Access tokens can be created by Azure AD either for the user or an application. Azure AD supports multiple OAuth flows that developers can use to obtain an access token. And access tokens are submitted by the application to the identity provider to request permissions to a resource on behalf of the user. So I would say access tokens can be created by Azure AD for either the user or an application. I mean, it is technically correct, but it's not this one. We'll give that away. It's not this one. Azure AD supports...
We're trying to find the one that's incorrect, remember? Because this hangs me up. Every time I've done this one, I always forget that it's asking for the ones that are incorrect. So access tokens can be created for either. Thus, we're in a good spot.
Yeah, I gave it away. I clicked on this one. But it's access tokens are submitted by the application to the identity provider to request permissions to a resource on behalf of the user. This is incorrect.
That's right, because we don't submit an access token to the identity provider to request the permissions. We get an access token in response to a permission request, and then we send that to the resource.
Exactly. And that takes us nicely to the next one, which is about account types. Like what types of accounts can you deal with or in your application?
Yeah. So that's a big one, right? So Azure AD and Microsoft Identity as a whole, they can be a bit overwhelming because there's so many different options and things to choose. And so we kind of have to start asking ourselves questions a little bit earlier, right? And so a big one, one of the first things to ask is who's going to actually be using your app? Like who is the intended audience for your app? Is it people who you work with or people you go to school with? Something like an internal line of business style thing or something for, you know, to keep your team running, something small or something, maybe something really big that runs your business, but it's only really intended for people who you work with.
Mm-hmm.
We've also got apps that if you're maybe selling some SaaS, maybe you're going to build an application that people use at work or at school, but you're not going to necessarily use it at your work or school, but you're going to sell it to people who are. And so you need anybody in the Azure AD with anybody with a Microsoft account or an Azure AD account to be able to sign in. And then we have two other ones, which are a little bit less frequent or less common. So apps for individuals. So if you're building an app that like extends Outlook for personal people, or if you want to sign in individuals into your application and you want to access their personal calendars or something like that, that's a personal Microsoft account. So those are things like the account that you use to sign into your Xbox, for example. That is an example of a personal Microsoft account, but you can build apps for people and let them use those identities. The same way that you can use a work or a school identity. And then the big one here in the middle is around apps that extend our existing platforms. So say you're going to build an app for Teams, or say you're going to build an app that needs to access people's Azure subscriptions for cost management or something like that. Those have some specific things that we need to concern ourselves with there too. And these questions all boil down into tenancy. And the tenancy, because you'll hear the word tenant used a lot, which tenant, directory, we kind of use them interchangeably. A directory is your Azure AD, your Azure Active Directory. A lot of times you'll also hear it called tenant, which just makes it more confusing. But essentially, it all comes down to how we want to control access to these applications. And this is an Azure AD specific feature. So there are things that that are protocol specific about how you interact with the service as a developer, but then the configuration and all the extra stuff that we do, like these are all things that are specific to Azure AD. So like the tenancy is not part of an OpenID spec about how to get a token. It's more about the service that's going to be using it. So tenancy is all about who needs to control access to things, right? So in a single tenant app, we'll say that's like a line of business app. So let's say that Christos and I work together and he is building an expenses app for us to track our expenses, right? And we both work in the same place, and we need to, both of us need to have access in addition to the other people that we work with. But nobody outside of our company needs access to it. That's a great example of a single tenant, of a single tenant app. It only allows people to sign in who are within our company or within our organization, and our administrators are the ones who control who has access to what, right? But let's say that Christos leaves, he gets a better job somewhere else. We still have to work together. Right. We still have to, there's still some stuff we need to work on together. So he may leave and I'll invite him to come back and work with me on stuff, but as a guest. And that's what B2B is, Azure AD B2B. We're going to talk about that in detail here in a few minutes. But so I've invited him back to come and work with me, but we're going to work together on the stuff that are my data, right? We're going to work together on stuff for me. So my administrators at Contoso, they're the ones who still have control over what he can and can't see, right? And then we have our last one, which is all around multi-tenancy. And multi-tenancy is one of the coolest features of Azure AD. In my opinion, it's one of the things I like the most. But it can also be potentially be one of the most confusing. But because so many companies and so many people have Azure at work, they have Azure, they have Office, something, some Microsoft product at work, they have Azure AD. And if I'm building software, for example, let's say that Christos leaves and he's going to go work for a company that's going to make really, really awesome expense reporting tools, right? If he's building that, he needs to be able to give all of his customers the ability to manage their own access, right? So instead of him managing that as this vendor who's building software to sell, instead of him managing that or having to build an interface to manage all that, instead with multi-tenancy, we can let anybody in Azure AD from any directory sign in, and their administrators maintain control.
Nice. So I think we had a good example of an expenses app, right? Where we were going to sell that and become rich, but we want to people or other organizations to deploy that to their own organizations and use our expense app to manage their own organizational expenses using their own Azure Active Directory account. So we don't want them to be either guests on our tenant or be part of our company. They deal with that. So that's where multi-tenancy works very, very well, these kind of scenarios and more, obviously.
Yeah,
hopefully for that makes it clear. Yeah.
So we're going to look at single tenant apps first. So single tenant apps, these are users that are in the same directory as that application. So when we register the app, we do an app registration, which is something we'll do here in a few minutes. When we register an application and we say that it's single tenant, we're telling Azure AD, hey, don't let anybody sign into this app unless they're a member of our directory. Unless the user is in the same directory as this application, I don't want you to let them sign in. And what that means is you'll get an error message like what you see below, where a user cannot sign in unless they are a member of this organization. However, there are ways around that, which we're going to talk about here in a minute. So I'm going to go sign into a single tenant app, right? So single tenant app is pretty much just that. It's an app that's single tenant, and we've already got one set up here. So I'm going to go over to this app. So we look at we'll start with the app registration, which is how we tell Azure AD that we've got an app that we want people to sign into. So this is things like where are we going to sign in and what the redirect URLs are and all that sort of stuff. The key, however, is supported account types. And you'll notice we have this one selected, which is accounts in this organizational directory only. And it's called single tenant because only people in my directory are going to be allowed to sign into this app, right? So I'm going to go over to a new browser. We're going to go to this site, which this site is called single.identitycrisis.dev. And now I'm signed in. And you'll notice it's got my email address up at the top. It says, hey, you know, hello, user, blah, blah, blah. And then it's got a list of all the claims. And the claims are the things that we get from Azure AD. They're just key value pairs that tell us about a user and who they are. And there are a couple of really important pieces of information in here. The first one is the issuer. And the issuer is the essentially the entity that assigned or the entity that created this token that you got when you signed in. And so in this case, our issuers all follow the format of login.microsoftonline.com and then a GUID, which represents your tenant ID. So this is my specific directory ID or tenant ID is this 98A34 number. So when I get this, when I as a developer get this token in my app, I can look at that and know, okay, the issuer is an issuer that I recognize, which is my own, and I'm not going to let anybody else sign in. And I can do all sort whatever kind of logic I need to do in my app to say, okay, well, if you're not part of mine, then if you're not part of my tenant, then I don't want you to come in, or you don't have the right issuer, then I don't want you to be there. Azure AD is going to prevent that from happening, however, in the case of a single tenant app. So we're going to look at something called B2B next. And B2B is all about guest access. This is, let's say Christos and I are working together and I want him to go and access this app. So Christos, go. Why don't you go try to access this app right now as yourself? And let's
sounds
see.
Like an awesome invite. Let's see if I can sign in. So I've gone to the exact same URL that you gave me, and I'm going to use my email from my own developer tenant to sign in because that's the only account I have. And I'm going to put my password from my password manager. As you can see, it's nice and long. And then sign in. Oh, check that out.
You can. Up here,
I cannot use this application. I am not able to access it. Why?
Because you are not a member. You are not in there. And if you look at the error message too, it's actually fairly detailed and good enough for us to know. So it says the user account from identity provider, sts.windows.net, blah, 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 does not exist in my tenant.
Yes.
So because his account does not exist in my directory, he can't sign in because Azure AD says, well, this is only for people who are here and this who are members of this directory. This user is not a member. Thus, this user cannot sign in, right? Now,
sad trombone.
You've got something else for us, right?
I do, yes. Remember, I have proprietary knowledge here, and JP needs me to work on this app because we've been working for a while together. And yes, that dreaded Teams bar. And we've been working together for a long time, and I need to continue working with him. So he's going to hire me as a consultant to come and work together. The nice thing is that Azure Active Directory allows you to set the topology called business to business, which in effect will give me access to companies' resources and application, but in a very controlled manner and very, very limited access to only the things that we need in order to build our, let's say, expenses up. Therefore, JP or JP's admin will have very tight control on my access. And when that happens, there's a nice graphic that shows you the difference between the account, how Azure AD sees the account management. So if you are in a single tenant with B2B, at some point JP will invite me to his tenant and I'll be able to, so if I'm in a single tenant with B2B, if I am part of this organization, if I work for JP's company and I have the same email address, then I would sign in properly using my normal account. But if I were to come, as you saw earlier on, through an external account, it would say, well, no, I'm sorry, you don't have access. You're not part of this tenant. However, once JP provides me with guest access, then Azure Active Directory can create this thing called the SADO account that has this kind of a long form at the top. And this will allow me to use my own company email to sign into JP's company and work on the resources that I have been given granted access. Which working at a company like Microsoft, we have a lot of vendors and a lot of external people. So it's always playing the guessing game whether they have access to Teams or OneDrive or other resources because it's all tightly controlled by that. So we live this experience every day as we go through stuff. So is my tenancy provided? Have you done it?
So one quick note before we leave from the screen. So you'll notice the format of this account is Sharon_FabriCam_com#ext. Now that's just what the format is today, and that's what it's been for a while, but don't take a dependency on that format. The most important thing to notice about this though is that at contoso.com is still the realm or still the suffix for this user. So it is very much a shadow user that has been created, but instead of that user being able to create it themselves, I have created that user by inviting Christos. So I just hit the invite button on my side to invite Christos, and he's going to go show us what he got. So here's his email address. Here's his email that he got from my directory from the virtue of me inviting him.
Yeah.
So because I've invited you, you've got this invitation, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when you accept that invitation, that's going to go do a bunch of the hamster wheels start running over in Azure AD world, and now it's going to ask you to sign in. So go ahead and sign in.
With my normal password, right?
Yep, with your normal password. She's got your username at the top. So that's Christos@cmascus.onmicrosoft.com. So all that looks as we would expect. So you'll get your password.
In a second. I need to go to my password manager, remember? I don't remember long 32-character password. And I will put it here, and I will sign in.
Yeah. And now.
Progress.
Now it's a little different. So now it says, hey, you want to stay signed in, which that's fine. And now, the big difference now is that it's asking you, hey, you want to redeem this invitation. So by you redeeming that invite, I am going to get some extra information about you, like your name, email address, and photo. And so this is sort of an extra check, sort of a one-time check to say, are you sure you really want to join this organization? Especially because I haven't provided a privacy statement. Sure you want to do it?
Well, I trust you. You look like a trustworthy person. Why not?
So what's happening right now, this is where that shadow account's getting created. So this is going to sit here and churn and churn for a minute. And this is going to create that shadow account for you. And now, because I have security policies enabled, now it's going to make you go and do stuff, which you should be able to skip.
Multi-factor authentication. Which is nice because, oh my God, that's a lot. The nice thing about this one is that JP did not have to write any code explicitly to do that. These are all policies pushed down by Azure Active Directory, and the application, which is a standard .NET web app, gets all the benefit of that without writing a single line of code extra to do all this. Yep. Now, I'm not going to add yet another account into my authenticator because I already have a few, but going through this process would eventually allow me to go and sign in. Yeah, I'm not going to do that now.
You can set up a different method. Just use your cell phone number, or your phone number. You can get a text on, but I'll let you do that for a minute. So there's one other thing I want to call out about B2B while you're typing in your phone number. Because there are these shadow accounts that have been created, and because those accounts exist in this directory, it now means that any applications that you have that are only looking for an authenticated user are now also accessible to these folks, right?
Just they're approved. Just arrived.
Okay, got your text.
Have the number. Okay, yes, 7705207. I'm doing it off screen because it still shows my telephone number. I like to be a public person, but not that public of a person.
Now, one of the other things to note too is he's having to go through this MFA process because I have enforced that. So I am the administrator of the directory that he's joining because he's accessing my resources, and because he's accessing my resources, that means that I have control over what he can and can't do and what he has to do in order for that to work. So setting up MFA with his cell phone number, for example, or through an authenticator app, that is a requirement to be a member of my directory, and it's a requirement that he is enforced upon his account when he's accessing my resources. So now that you have an account, Chris, so see if you can get back to the single.identitycrisis.dev app that we had up just a minute ago.
Yeah, it was lovely because after all that chat, I still managed to dox myself.
That's okay.
Single.identitycrisis.dev.
Yep.
Oh, check that out.
Yeah, nice.
Consent form.
And now you're in. So now you're in. Now, the thing to note in here is look at that issuer. So that issuer is still the same, right?
Yes.
That's still the same. That's my directory ID, that 98E34.
Yeah.
However, there's a new claim called identity provider. And if you look at that identity provider, that shows your actual home your home directory, right?
Yes.
But it is a single tenant app, meaning it will only allow users who are signing in through our tenant and to get there. But the big difference is because you are now a guest, you are now considered a part of my tenant or my directory, and the single tenant app will still let you come in.
Right. So there's a question. How did you customize that sign-in screen for Azure Active Directory?
It's called tenant branding, and it's just it's part of Azure AD. So you can choose a background image and a logo and the text and all the different things that you need to have in there.
I think we'll cover more customization. Like if you really want to customize the experience, you can't really do a lot in Azure Active Directory. But if you are creating a consumer option, we'll look in a bit how you can approach that topology. So going back into our slides, I think we did our demo without saying that we're doing a demo. I like that. So in our demo, we did use a single tenant app from earlier. That was the one that JP signed in himself. Then as an administrator, he invited me as an external user using my own email address, my own tenant. And then I was able to redeem it. You saw that live in action. And I even had set up my two-factor authentication. And then finally, I was able to access the application as myself, which was great because now we can work on our expenses app and I can get consultant fees for it. So there's no knowledge check. Back to you, JP, before we jump to knowledge check.
It's the great revolving door. So years ago, I have to tell you, I'll tell you this while I'm getting my screen up. Years and years ago, I worked at a place, and the guy was he'd been like a 15-year guy, right? He'd been there forever. He left. He got laid off, big severance package or whatever. And then he came back the next day as a contractor. So I was like, oh, it's not a bad gig. I need to figure out how to get on that train, you know.
Before you jump into best practices, there's a question. Is it required for users to have MSA account or Azure AD account to be able to use Azure Active Directory authentication for applications?
That's a good question. So do you mean in terms of, if we mean in terms of signing up for and managing Azure AD, yes, you need to have some kind of an account. You can create one. You don't have to have a Microsoft account or anything else. When you invite a user, when you do an invitation, that invitation can be to an email address. It is essentially proof of email address or proof that you control an email address. So if I had sent that email to say,
Gmail.
Christos@gmail.com, with Gmail is a special case. We'll skip that. If I sent that to Christos at Comcast.net or something, right? You would get a new account created and you'd be prompted to set up a password and it would be essentially specifically for you accessing the resources in my directory.
Right. Okay.
So if a user has Azure AD already, it's going to default to that. If they do not, and they don't have a Microsoft account that's associated with that email, they'll essentially just be asked to create a new credential. And that new credential is essentially that for a brand new user.
Right.
As an admin, you've got a lot of control over what guest users and member users can't do. And so the one last point on that would be just to be really careful when you're doing guest users with how your applications are configured. Because if your apps are only configured to look for any authenticated user, you could get into a position where you've got guest users who are authenticated in a single tenant fashion, than that they're authenticated because they're guest users and they can come right into your apps. So you'd want to have some extra controls, like maybe a role or something similar in place so that you don't accidentally give access to, say, sensitive business data to a bunch of randos in your Azure AD tenant. Okay, so the last app type, multi-tenant apps. These are ones where you're probably going to be building an app that you want to sell. There might be other reasons why you're doing it. Things like you want to manage different Azure AD directories, like maybe you're a really big org and you have multiple directories. Multi-tenant apps are all about letting anybody sign in and letting that control flow through to that person's administrator. So if we go back to our diagram from earlier, now we just have green check marks everywhere. And it's cool because Azure AD handles the heavy lifting of, well, which directory are you a member of and that sort of work. And it handles all the administration stuff, so your customers administrators or your users administrators are the ones who can control who can access what, do they have to use MFA, all that sort of stuff. The trade-off is you as the app developer have a little bit of extra work that you have to do, right? And the reason for that is it all comes down to the issuer, right? And the issuer is, we talked earlier, the issuer is the entity that created that token and sent it to you. And earlier we looked at it and it was a 9.8 whatever, right? The 9.8E5. So let's go look at another demo. So I'm going to open up a different browser tab with a different profile. Mm-hmm. In fact, I'm going to use my I'll use my work profile here. So ooh, I'm going to use great. A browser that's got I'm going to use a browser that's got all my work stuff in it, and I'm going to go to multi.identitycrisis.dev. Now this is the same code that was running on the other app. It's just got a different identity configuration. So this is the same app from earlier. And in fact, mm-hmm. I'm going to put it next to it so we can see both of them. So here's one app. Here's the other.
Nice.
Right.
Yep.
Now. If we look at the data that's in here, this is the user account that I signed in with. It's my regular user.
Yep.
However, here, this is my work user, right? Mm-hmm. So we have both. But you'll notice at the top, the issuer, and this one is 9898A34, blah, blah, blah. Same for Christos when he was a guest.
Yep.
If we look over here, you'll notice the issuer value is different. So this is 72F988BF. This is Microsoft's Azure Active Directory instance ID, right? Or tenant ID. And you'll also notice there's a tenant ID claim. And the tenant ID claim in this case for me and for Christos as a B2B user in single tenant mode will always be mine because I'm the only one who can issue tokens. However, in the case of a multi-tenant app, you'll notice the tenant ID here matches the tenant ID in the issuer. And what's important to recognize here is you as a developer, you now have to say, okay, if I get this issuer value, what do I do with it? Do I have an organizational concept in my app? What is the Microsoft organization or what is the Contoso organization in my application? What does that mean? What kind of access does that confer? All those types of questions.
Right.
And so that's the extra work that you as the developer have to do is to make sense of what this means. So I've got this different issuer value. Does that mean that you're a member of organization 123 and my app has to make changes or load a different database or look at different data? All those sorts of questions. That's what you have to do based on the tenant ID and based on the issuer ID.
That's nice. So yeah. One single point to differentiate between different organizations using your application. And then based on that, you can create all the logic you need as a developer. But the authentication process remains consistent across everyone accessing your application.
Correct. And in this case, when you and I signed in single tenant, we're signing in and I, as the administrator, made those decisions like you got to have MFA, you got to have this, you got to have that.
Yep.
When I sign in with my Microsoft account, my Microsoft administrator is the one dealing with that. The Microsoft administrator is the one who says, oh, well, you're only allowed to access this app if you are coming from a trusted device and you did MFA, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that is the critical difference around when multi-tenancy is appropriate and when it is not, is when you want your customers' administrators to deal with that drama and not you.
Right.
And usually the reason for that is in a single tenant app, you are accessing my data, my business data, my Contoso business data. Mm-hmm. And in a multi-tenant app, I, as the developer, this is not my data that I own. It's data that my customers own.
Yep.
It's my customers' file data or my customers' photos. And I want them to make the decision of, oh, you need to have these kinds of policies in place to access.
Nice. So different companies will have different kind of security restrictions based on what you need or how they define their security policies, which is nice.
Yep.
You leave it downstream for somebody else to make the hard decisions, not you. So developers won't blame you for setting up MFA into their accounts.
Well, and you think too, like, imagine if you're building expenses 2.0, you're building some super cool expenses app and you work for a software company. Imagine, you know, you having to balance all of the customer demands around device authentication and MFA and all these different requirements for accessing stuff. If you had to implement all that yourself as a developer, I mean,
that's insane.
It's just a mountain of work. You know, you'd either have to tell them, sorry, I can't do it, or, come back later, or use an external provider, because it would be a bunch of work.
Mm-hmm.
A few things to check with multi-tenancy. Because in multi-tenancy, you are essentially letting somebody else administer how users get access into your app.
Yep.
That means that you should probably test in a variety of configurations.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, my developer directory, Christos's developer directory, we can create applications and we can run them. We can add policies. We can configure what apps they have permissions to, all that sort of stuff. At work, in the Microsoft directory that we both work in, we have somewhere just above zero writes in that directory.
That is correct.
Right. So, like, we can't consent to stuff. We can't say, yeah, I want this app to have access to my mailbox. Like, we have to let, you know, we got to call IT and put in tickets and do all this sort of stuff because, you know, they're saying, well, this is your mailbox. I don't know who wrote this app. And so if you're building apps like that, you're going to want to test in with a variety of configurations to know that your app isn't going to totally bomb, or in many cases, just to totally understand what your user's experience is going to be like, because you may need to write docs around that or have some sort of an onboarding experience to say, hey, if your company has this really locked down, here's some info you need to give to your administrator or something similar.
Yeah.
Right. So if you're building apps like that, yeah, that's going to be a big thing. And then appropriate names and descriptions. Those are super, super important because this is essentially the first interaction your customer is going to have. So they're going to hit your app and it's going to say, hey, this app would like to access this and access that and access this. And if your user can't figure out why you want to access that, they're going to say, yeah, no way.
I'm not consenting. Exactly.
And then the last bit before we roll over into the next one, I know we got a bunch of questions when you get to too. Applications and service principles. You hear this all the time. We talk about apps. We talk about app registrations and service principles and all these different things. If an identity or Azure AD person is talking about an application or an app, they probably mean an app registration. And that is the thing we saw earlier about authentication and putting in a redirect URL. That's the way to say, hey, Azure AD, this is my app and users are going to sign into it.
Yep.
In single tenant apps, the application and service principle are essentially the same thing. Mm-hmm. Here's this one I meant to show, which is that, you know, this is where the app registration shows where all the app registration has all these different pieces of data in it. What APIs that we're delivering or what APIs we've got, et cetera, right? What permissions we need.
I like the metaphor that I used the last time. Like, it's a template.
Yeah.
App registrations are templates.
The service principle is the actual like security object that gets created in the directory. In a single tenant app and the service principle are essentially the same thing. And so things that you do to the application are reflected in the service principle, and there's not really a whole lot of extra stuff there, right? Because they are essentially one and the same, even though they're two separate objects. In multi-tenant applications, however, the application ID stays consistent globally. So the app ID is the same for all directories, but every time a user uses that application from a new directory, a new service principle gets created for that specific directory.
Yep.
So in our multi-tenant app that we just showed, it's got app ID 123, and that app ID 123 is global across all of Azure AD. However, in my directory, it is service principal ID 456. And in Microsoft's directory, it's service principal ID ABC, right?
Yep.
And that way, I can configure how users access it for me in my directory, and Microsoft's administrators can configure it for them. And anybody else who goes and signs into that app, which you can go sign into it right now if you want, it's multi.identitycrisis.dev. Anybody can go sign into that if they have an Azure AD account. When that happens, a service principle is created in the directory where that user came from. And that's what gives their administrators the ability to do that. Okay, you do a quick knowledge check, and then we're going to jump into some questions, and then maybe we'll wrap up a B2C if we got time. Does that sound good, Christos?
Yeah, I love it. Let's do this.
All right. So the primary difference between single-tenant and multi-tenant apps. So we just talked about this quite a bit, right?
Mm-hmm.
So single-tenant apps reserve the name of the app across all Azure AD directories, while the name of the multi-tenant apps can be used in multiple Azure AD directories. Did we talk about app names at all?
You just said that you need to give it a meaningful name when people create it, but not the, it, you know.
Yeah, not the name of the app. Okay, yeah. So A, I yeah. think A's out. Mm-hmm. Single-tenant apps can only be used in one tenant, while multi-tenant apps can be copied into multiple directories.
Yeah, good luck with that.
That's kind of a, I mean, yeah, that, I wouldn't say they're copied as much as they are instantiated, right?
But then again, the key is in the wording. I think copied is not right. So
yeah,
that's a hint.
Let's look at our last one. Single-tenant apps allow only users from the apps directory to sign in, while multi-tenant apps support users, multiple tenants, to sign in to use the app. So I...
Looks right to me.
It's the most correct.
It's the most correct.
Yeah. And...
what about the next one? Is it...
Well, yeah, it is. It is it the is. Most correct. So yeah, single-tenant apps... Yep, just people from my directory, and multi-tenant apps allow users from any tenant to sign in.
Perfect.
To use the app. Okay, last question in our knowledge check. Key difference between an application and service principle. We just talked about this too, so this one should be good.
Let's give you paying attention.
We'll start from the bottom. Service principles exist in the directory where the app is created, where application objects exist in each Azure AD tenant where the application is used. Well, that feels like an opposite.
Yeah.
So B, app objects are templates that exist in every directory where the application is used. They're used to create service principles that can be customized in each directory. That's an interesting set of wording. To create service principles, that sort of implies you can create multiple service principles from a single app, which is a little strange. And then app objects exist in the directory where the app is created. Service principle objects exist in each Azure AD tenant where the application is used.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's going to be a pretty strong A. Would you agree?
I would agree. Yes.
So before we jump into B to C, let's take a look at some. You said we've got some questions, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. You want to start? You want to jump into what some of those are?
Yeah. Your example about the expense project. If you sell the app to a company, that company has an admin, a power user, read-only users, and user consent for write scope should appear to subset of users. How do I implement that? Perfect question. Thank you.
All right. Roman. Perfect. Okay. So let's go look at a couple things. And we're going to talk about some of these concepts later, so I won't dive into them too much right now, mm-hmm. just to, in an effort to save some time. So
sure.
Let's go look at a multi-tenant app registration. Now, these are also valid for single-tenant apps, but let's see, multi-tenant. Let's find a multi-tenant app in here. So which one have I created most recently? This one. Okay. So in our applications, there are two things that we can do. The first thing we can do is we can expose what are called app roles, right? So the app roles are a way to say my users, the users that are doing things, like let's call this, I'll use yours, admin. Let's create an admin.
Yep.
User, and the value will be admin, and the description will be admin. And we mm-hmm. want to enable it, sure. So, you know, admins can do admin stuff, right? So I'm going to apply this now.
So descriptive. I like it.
I mean, it's an admin user. We can create other ones too. So what yep. your other one, Rahman, was power user, right?
Yes.
The power user, we create one of these, we give it a value. The value is very important because the value is what's going to come over in your claim set, which we'll talk about here in a sec. Mm-hmm. And then power user, let's see, power users use power. Okay. And we're going to enable that one too. So I've created these two app roles. Now, in the directory in which I am,
mm-hmm.
we can go to enterprise applications and find that app, and we can assign users into it.
Yep.
This experience is exactly what your customers administrators would see. So they would go to their enterprise applications blade, which is part of Azure AD. And while they wouldn't see your app in the app registrations area, they will see it in the enterprise applications area. So if I come mm-hmm. here and we search for, what was it called?
Multi-tenant
app. Multi-tenant app. So here's our multi-tenant app. This is where we can do what's called a user and group assignment. So we assign users in groups. So I'll mm-hmm. click this. I will click this Azure AD. Thank you. I guess I didn't click in the right spot. And you'll notice by default, because I've used the app, I have a role. I'll find a user or a group. So I'll choose, I don't know. I can use a group as well. I'll use, I don't know. Let's do, we'll do Christos.
Christos the hammer. Yes.
and we'll give him access and we'll give him a specific role, and I'll give him a role of power user, and I'll sign
go
that.
With my name, but I will accept it. Fine.
power tool user maybe. And then I'll go ahead and give myself a role too. And users can be a member of multiple roles.
Yeah.
So I'm going to pick a role and I'll choose admin, select that and assign it. And so now when we look at this, I've got two roles actually. I'm an admin and I also have default access. And we can remove default access if we want, but I could also be an admin and a power user and they could both come over in the claim set. So this is how your users, or this is how your customers' administrators would assign users into your roles. The roles that you define on the app object, when that app is stamped out and when that service principal is stamped out in the other directory as a user signs in, all of those role assignments come along with it, or not role assignments, those role definitions come along yes. with it. So your customer would come in here and do this just like we just did. Mm-hmm. And when the user comes to your application, they're going to have an extra set of claims if they are a member of these things, if they're a member of these roles. And I will show you that extremely quickly, and we'll jump back over. We'll jump back over to the deck. Now I'm going to do one extra thing here. Just so that we can show you this without having to actually go into an app itself. So I'm going to add a new URL here for JWT.MS. JWT.MS is a great tool for debugging. It's a great way for us to figure out what is inside of a token in Azure AD. So you can take a token and sign in and get to JWT.MS, and it'll handle opening it up and cracking it open and doing everything else. So while I'm doing this, Christos, do you want to jump back over into the deck while I get a request built to do this?
Oh, yeah. So let's do this. So the last bit in our conversation is Azure Active Directory B2C, which is the business to consumer or business to customer. And the idea here is to allow developers to build solutions that are for external users. And by external users, I mean anyone that's not part of your organization and needs to come in to create a profile and maybe buy stuff from your shop, interact with your, you know, other friends and whatever. So if you're building a forum, that's the perfect tool there. So Azure Active Directory B2C allows you to bring anyone with a username and a password, or they can sign in with a social media account. In fact, any OpenID Connect provider can be used as an identity provider to Azure AD B2C. And with that, we can build some elaborate solutions that can have a front end, a back end, mobile apps. It can be, daemon apps that do some management there. But the nice thing about B2C is that you can quickly get off the ground and create at the core is just a username and password database. And on top of that, you can build some very elaborate flows and sign-in experiences. B2C also allows you to quickly customize the experience. So when people are redirected, or when your customers are redirected to go to sign in, it looks and feels like a proper application or part of the application. So they don't feel like they're disconnected, going somewhere else to sign in and come back to your app again. And I have that's caused a little bit of confusion because I did say external users. So think about B2C as a business inviting other people to collaborate and share business data, whereas B2C is predominantly for developing consumer apps where you get somebody external to your organization to come and buy or interact with your app, but they don't get any access to organizational data. It's just a customer-facing solution. Signing into Etsy, signing into your Netflix, signing into Walmart, signing into your supermarket to buy stuff, this is where B2C is applied. So it's not Azure AD. There's nothing organizational there. And I want to very, very quickly jump into a demo unless JP is ready. But I have actually a Blazor WebAssembly app that is using an API in the backend and authenticates users with Azure Directory B2C. And the whole point there is to show you the experience, how different it is and how customizable it is. So if I come out of that, I already have my Blazor app running. There's an API behind the scenes. So if I try to sign in, you'll notice that here I get a slightly different experience. You can fully customize that page to look and feel as you want it to. And I will say, christos.matskas@outlook.com. And I will put my password. And I will sign into my application. And with that, I'm signed in. As you can see, I used an Outlook account. It could have been any Gmail account, any account I have with a valid email address. And now I'm calling my API. So I got an access token that gets passed down to my API, and my API serves the weather data, which is totally random. And that's it. Let's come out of this one and let's see what else we have in the demo, in the deck. And then we can jump back into our questions. Let's just do that. Here. My deck jumped all over the place. Fine. There you go. Summary. What did we learn today? So throughout this lesson or throughout this module, I hope you were able to follow along as we're talking about what is Microsoft Identity, what kind of tokens do you get, what kind of accounts can you manage in your application, and what are the supported topologies, and hopefully be able to understand which topology to use for your solution or for your needs or for your business requirements. If you like what you saw, then we do this on a weekly basis. In fact, bi-weekly basis. So twice a week on Tuesdays and Fridays, we jump on the stream. The URL is ak.ms/425 show. We're on Twitch. So we spend a couple of hours showing people how to do identity and security end-to-end. And we touch all different scenarios, all different languages. We get guests and we have fun on the stream and we learn with you. So make sure to join us. Make sure to subscribe so you don't miss out. And we really look forward to seeing you. Now, remember, this is a part of a number of it's part of the path. So make sure to go and try to fill in the module today. We'll be covering the rest of the modules in the identity path over the next few weeks. So we'll be back again and again and again. We really look forward to having you. Next time, we're covering application types, which is super fun. And we're going to learn how to build different types of applications around the Microsoft Identity Platform. And that's us. It's time for questions.
Of which we have a lot.
We have a lot. Yeah, true. Yeah. Thank you for sending all these questions.
So the first question, which is what's the keyword that I just said, which was about logging and debugging tokens? It's a tool called jwt.ms. We can put a link up somewhere, but it's https://jwt.ms. You can take that URL and you can paste in a token, or you can actually set up to redirect, which is exactly what this URL does. So this was the app that we had just created a minute ago, and we added some roles to it. And you'll notice that client ID here. And what it does, it parses out the JWT. So we have transparent JWTs, which is another question that I see up here. Our JWTs or JSON web tokens are transparent. It's all base64 URL encoded blobs of text. The big thing, of course, that we have a signature at the bottom, and the signature is how you verify that this actually came from wherever it said that it did. Now, because I'm in the admin role, you'll notice that there's a role here called admin, and that admin role was by virtue of my membership, what we just walked through, putting myself in there, right? And so that's how that admin role came over. So you will get that. And then ASP.NET knows how to parse that out, and it will actually work with things like the authorization tag that you put on a controller or action method or whatever. ASP.NET authorization will pick this up and just work with it. So you could have like authorize roles equals admin on a method or on a controller, and then ta-da, it just sort of works.
Yeah.
Which is super cool. And then Tim's question, where is the appropriate place user permissions within my application to be accessed? And that is largely in the ID token. So your API, the permissions that a user has for your API, those permissions, if you can express them in roles or in scopes, roles and scopes are a great way to express them, but you create them on the API app registration. So what we did was create it on a client. So we created this on this web app. The thing about APIs is I could call it from a web app, I could call it from a mobile app, from a browser app, from a whatever. And the roles that I am a member of and the scopes that that app requests are two kind of similar but kind of different things. A role is more about who I am. Mm-hmm. I'm always a member of the admin role for API 123, regardless of how I'm accessing it. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter if I'm coming from a mobile app or a phone or a browser or whatever. A scope is more about what do I want this application to access on my behalf? Because like I may be an admin in my mailbox, but I may want this sketchy mobile app that I just downloaded to only have access to my calendar and only be able to read it.
Yeah.
And so that scope is published by my API to allow my calendar to be read. And me as the developer, the API developer, I have to know what calendar.read means and then, you know, make the decision based on that, right? Like say, oh, you can only write operations are going to 401 or 403, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
There's a question about Blazor WASM. I wanted to use Razor components in Identity UI, but when scaffolding, this become Razor pages, which does not support Razor components. What would be a good approach? I think that's a question for Dan Roth, because I don't know how you would translate Razor components in Blazor WASM. Feel free to reach out to us on the 45show@microsoft.com and we'll connect you, or Discord, 45show/Discord/join, aka.ms in the front, and we can take it from there.
Yeah, there would also be there's a special package in Blazor WASM for MSAL, which is the MSALs is the library we were looking at earlier. There's a special package for that, so you shouldn't hopefully you shouldn't have to do any of that work yourself.
Customization. Yeah.
How does the user know if something like a rogue app is abusing the trust? The big thing we have now is called publisher verification. Publisher verification means that the multi-tenant app, in fact, you may have seen it earlier when we were signing in, we didn't mention it, but it said unverified. Publisher verification is a way that we verify customers who are publishing multi-tenant apps. And in order to get a verified sort of check mark next to you, you have to be a Microsoft partner, essentially. And being a Microsoft partner means that you've been through company validation, domain validation, all sorts of things like that. And it gives you a little bit of extra trust. The other thing about it is that a normal user cannot consent to an unverified multi-tenant application. Only an administrator is allowed to do that consent. That any user can consent to a multi-tenant app that is coming from a verified publisher, but only verified publishers allow users. Admins must do it if they're unverified.
Right.
Advantages of Microsoft Identity over Identity Server 4. They're two different things, so it's a little bit apples and oranges. Identity Server 4 is a token service that you host and manage and own on your own and maintain and code that you write. And the Microsoft Identity Platform is a service that we run for you. So we do all the serving and you just do all the using. Identity Server, you're going to have to use yourself.
Yeah.
Conditional access for service principles. I'll answer that one because it's quick. Soon. The classic Microsoft answer, soon, TM, right? Managing Azure AD users, Graph API. Graph API is the primary API for managing that sort of stuff. Totally.
Yep.
Yep.
Also, can AD beside email usernames use phones, and how can you make a hybrid?
Adding phone numbers alongside emails and using the same password. There is, we'll have to dig into it, I guess, and probably maybe it's something you and I could even dig into on 45 show one day. There are different ways to do user sign in, depending on how you want users to sign in. There's stuff like frontline worker sign ins and phone number sign in, where you could sign in with a phone number or you could sign in with a username. And those are essentially additional identities in the user identities collection that hangs off of a user object. That's much easier to do in B2C because B2C is built for that. Depending on the kinds of apps that you're using or the kind of apps you need to grant access to, like if this is for work or if it's for consumers or individuals, we can do that in regular Azure AD, but it's just a little bit of a different process.
Next one.
Redirect my app to the user's phone app for two-way authentication for final. So, are we talking about like the Microsoft MFA, like the
I think that's what it implies.
So that's called Broker Auth. We can put a link out or something, but it's called Microsoft Authenticator Broker Authentication, and it basically uses the app on the phone. So it skips, it'll jump over to the phone and then jump over to the phone app, like in the your app jumps to the phone browser or to the phone app.
the phone app signs the user in and does whatever else they have to do. And then you can go, and then it sends you back over to the mobile app. So, do you have to be more careful using MS Identity on WASM versus a server? 100%, because WASM is all 100% in the browser, and a user can fiddle with it however they want. The browser's untrusted. The user's desktop is untrusted. Never, ever, ever trust the desktop. So, yes, the things that you can do in WASM are very different from the things you can do in server in terms of security. Server can maintain a secret. WASM can't. Like, I can't put a secret, can't put a shared secret in the browser, but we can on the server, and so that changes how some of the flows work. So, yes, definitely be careful. High-level explanation about the relationship between Azure AD and ABAC, PBAC, and RBAC to access custom APIs. Well, right now all we've got is RBAC. Role-based access control. Attribute-based access control is available for certain Azure resources, and I believe that's still in preview.
Yeah, still preview.
So ABAC, defining your own ABAC, nothing to share right now, but right now the ABAC we do have is available for Azure stuff like storage, and more things will be coming online soon. The privilege access for power users. So the power user that we created in our application is completely arbitrary.
Yep.
In my app, we define what a power user is. And then our app says, okay, well, you're a power user, so you can do this, this, and this, and this. It's, Azure AD is just a metadata store at that point, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Doesn't do any authorization outside the app.
Yeah. It's not even authorization as much as it is an authorization store. So it stores the authorization data, but it doesn't actually enforce it in all cases. Would you recommend B2C over IS4? The only hidden drawback to B2C, if I'm being perfectly honest, is
area of expertise.
The customization customization. You can customize B2C a lot. Let me say, I'll start by saying that, right?
Super powerful. Yep.
Ultra customizable, ultra powerful. If you're used to customizing things with IS4 and code, and you move to B2C and you have to do lots, and if you have like heavy claims transformations and heavy, heavy customizations, you have to express those in something called Identity Experience Framework, which I would let you go and take a look at. I would advise you go and take a look at. It's all XML based, it's all declarative, and it can be a little bit exhausting. And it's a steep learning curve. Once you get there, you feel okay, but it's a pretty steep learning curve. If I was using IS4 and I want to switch to B2C, it's a no-brainer in terms of 50,000 users for free. It's distributed around the world, and you don't have to do anything except for use it. It just depends on how customized your IS4 instance is.
Mm-hmm. VS Code extension is coming for you. There's not really an extension in VS Code right now, but we're working on getting Azure Active Directory as one of the capabilities that interacts with Azure AD. I'll let you take the next one.
Multi-tenant SaaS app. If a particular tenant requires that an access token be shorter lived than other tenants, they want to. Is that something a tenant can control in Azure AD, or just something I, as the app developer, need to handle? No, that is something your customer's tenant can control, and it's all via conditional access. So their conditional access policies will apply. All you have to do as the developer is know that, you know, look at your access tokens and check, you know, when you're doing access token validation, part of the validation is checking like the EXP time, for example, as to when it expired. We've got a lot of other new stuff coming out. It's called continuous access evaluation protocol. We're working on a spec, spec and a standard for that, where that's going to totally sort of blow up the whole we have to have 1 hour long access tokens thing, which is cool. Okay, last question.
Last one.
We made it. 2 minutes left.
Go for it.
Assuming you're using Azure AD, what would be the recommended pattern for testing different combinations of scopes and API permissions, especially if you have regulatory issues with adding users to production?
Unit testing. Heavily.
Yeah, I mean, I think you'd probably end up with lots of token requests, either from different users, different test users, different mock users, using what's called the RPC grant.
We have a YouTube video. You can jump on our 4to5 show on YouTube, and you'll find it there. RPC and unit testing with Azure Active Directory. We have That's 10 true, seconds, yeah. So we're going to be kicked out. So we want to thank everyone for joining us today. We're going to be back here next week and for the next few weeks. So you come and learn with us, join us, jump on Learn TV. There are always exciting things for everyone to learn on. And we look forward to seeing you. Have a fantastic week, everyone.